Hello, Radio Free Nintendo listeners. This is Guillaume Veillette, the editor of this podcast. I am sorry to say that my own audio for the first segment of this episode has been lost, so I will try to edit around that. You will hear me during the second segment. Thank you for your understanding, and I hope you enjoy the show.
Hello, Internet. This is Radio Free Nintendo. It's a podcast about Nintendo.
Go away now.
I host this podcast, and my name is Jonathan Metz.
This is the worst intro in the show's history.
But it's ironically bad. Yeah. So we've also got James Jones.
Yeah.
And Guillaume Veillette. And we've also got our old friend and a very popular, frequent RFN guest, Michael TYP Cole.
Hey, everyone. I don't know about the popular part. Someone told me in TalkBack that like my voice makes their throat dry or something. So
that's awesome.
So it causes some kind of bizarre psychosomatic symptom in the listenership. I think that's worth showcasing. I mean, that's something we got that the other guys don't, right?
A salivating would be a better response. Certainly a more troubling one.
So yeah, TYP is here primarily. Well, TYP was made himself available last week and we already had a guest lined up. And I thought, well, this week I want to see if he's available because we haven't yet talked enough, I'll say, about Mario U. And this is the week where I finally got a little bit of time to play on it. I still don't really feel qualified. If you've missed the old retroactive where we talked about Super Mario World, that is recommended listening. And TYP was on that and did a bang up job. So
yeah, that was a fun
I can't think of anybody better. I do want to mention that later in the show, we're going to be doing this kind of grab bag. We've got a lot of different sort of small topics to talk about. So we're going to get through a lot of weird, random stuff. But for new business, Mike, why don't you kick it off?
Well, sure. Why don't we start with the Mario U or whatever the full title of that game is? New Super Mario Bros. U. I probably have played pretty much everything in the game. I didn't play like the challenge stuff very much. I only like tried one or two things there. But in terms of the main game, I think I'm pretty much done with it.
Until the DLC.
Well, I think I've seen all the levels.
Until the DLC.
Well, yes, until the DLC, of course.
I think it's more or less confirmed. But, you know, my guess is that they're going to wait until the 3DS DLC is kind of petered out and they're kind of done with that because they're still releasing a bunch of stuff. They just put out two more levels this week. And, you know, we already talked about some stuff they did last week. So they're pumping them out. But at some point, the 3DS game is probably going to taper down. And my guess is at that point, they'll have waited long enough that there will be kind of a critical mass of Wii U owners who actually have Mario U, and that will make it worthwhile to start doing the DLC for that. So they're probably working on it now and kind of building up a backlog of levels that they'll release later. But you can imagine if they're releasing DLC levels for the 3DS game and the Wii U game at the same time, that shit's confusing.
Yeah, even if the game right now doesn't support DLC, they can and already have patched that game, so I don't see any reason why they couldn't patch it to then support DLC.
I think they built it in.
Anyway, about the game itself. So there have been a lot of comparisons to Super Mario World, and I know with the map and everything, people were kind of looking forward to that. I'm here to say that the comparisons with Super Mario World is weak at best, I think. I know Neil in his review called it like New Super Mario World, but this game's map system just can't hold a candle to Mario World, in my opinion. I don't know what everyone else's thoughts are on this, but there are some cool secret exits, but the reward you get for those secret exits is just not very good. I mean, you get maybe one extra level per world. In some cases, it's just like a shortcut. a lot of cases, it's just a shortcut. So if you find the secret exit after you've already beaten the game, you're not really unlocking any new levels when you find a really cool exit, which really annoys me. But the
exit could be its own reward. That's one thing that people love about Super Mario World, is just finding the secret exits is difficult and satisfying in itself.
Yeah, I agree with that. I mean, there are some very cleverly hidden exits in New Super Mario Bros. U, and I really enjoyed finding them. I may not have found all of them for all I know, but seems like there's only like one secret exit per world. I think there was... like the jungle world, maybe there are a couple, but it seems like for most of them, there's only one. And when you look at like Super Mario World, the second world, there are two exits in the first level and the second level in the primary ghost house. And then, you know, that one of the first secret level has an alternate exit as well. So that's four.
Almost,
then you look at the secret.
Almost every ghost house in the whole game has more than one exit. That was kind of one of the main design features of the ghost houses when they debuted in that game.
Well, and that's sort of true in New Super Mario Bros. U. That's where a lot of the secret exits are. So I'm counting five secret exits in the second world alone. I might be off there. You know, just look at the map, and it's like you can find a secret, and then from there you can find another secret, and then from there you can find yet another secret, which is the Star Road, which is amazing, and then buried within that is yet another secret that gives you like eight new levels. It's just the complexity of Super Mario World's map design is just, it's incredible, and comparing this latest Mario game to that, it isn't a fair comparison. It isn't a good comparison.
Well, the world is huge, and it's, I think this is a massive improvement over any recent Mario game, quite frankly.
Oh yeah.
So I'm very glad they're moving this direction. I might agree with you, you know, I haven't played enough, but I might agree with you eventually that they maybe didn't go far enough and they didn't quite recapture just the breadth of the feeling from Mario World of, you know, there being so many different, secret things on the overworld, but overworld aside, what do you think of the comparison? I mean, I think in terms of the way that it's so colorful and inventive with the level designs and, you know, the fact that you do have Yoshi and even baby Yoshis, which we haven't seen in a very long time in any game. I think there is a concerted effort beyond the overworld to make this feel like a successor to Super Mario World.
I agree that the level design is very good in this game. To me, it doesn't really scream Mario World versus any other Mario game. I mean, in a lot of cases, it kind of reminds me more of Mario 3, where in my mind, the thing about Mario 3 was that they really tried to make every single level kind of have its own, I don't want to say gimmick, but its own catch. Pretty much every level in that game, there was something unique to that level. And both with New Super Mario Bros. on the Wii. In this game, I think the designers really do a great job of that. I mean, they really try to make every level in some way unique. And maybe it's pulling from some prior game in the Mario series. I mean, you spot things from Mario World, from Mario 3, even like Yoshi's Island in a few cases, I think.
There's even a few references to New Super Mario Wii.
Sure. Yeah.
Like with the shadows and the light.
Yeah. But I mean, nothing outsees its welcome, which is something that is one reason why Mario 3 is my favorite game in the whole series. And I think this game really does a good job of that. So it always feels fresh when you're playing through the game. And you know, if there's something you don't like, you know, in one level, you're not going to encounter it again pretty much. So, I mean, I think it's a very well put together game. It's a very good game. It's kind of hurt by the presentation, as you guys have already discussed, in terms of the music. It just feels a little too samey. I don't know. There's no defense for that. I mean, like, most of the songs are reused again. If they hadn't felt so beholden to using this look and feel of New Super Mario Brothers, I think people would be getting a lot crazier about this release. I really do think that the New Super Mario Brothers veneer does a disservice to this game.
It's always going to be part of the conversation that there, you know, there was already another Mario game this year that is similar in a lot of ways, although not as good. And you can't get away from that fact. And we've had, you know, the last one before that was 3 years ago in 2009, which is not that long ago for for a Mario game that is still quite close to this in terms of the presentation and the experience, you know, the having the four player support and everything. But I still think as a reviewer, I'm a little disappointed in some people, including some people we know and like and have even been on the show before. I'm disappointed in the fact that some reviewers can't get out of the context a little bit. I mean, I'm not saying context isn't important, but ultimately the game is what it is, regardless of what other games Nintendo has released. And I think the quality of this game is pretty hard to ignore. And I think the quality difference, if you're going to put it in the context of other Mario games, I think you should acknowledge that this is way better than the other Mario games they've been putting out recently. And, you know, I think the comparison, as much as it might work against you in terms of there being just maybe a little bit too much Mario, I think you also have to give it credit for doing a lot more with these ideas and a lot more with the whole concept of a 2D Mario game than anything else has in the past couple of decades.
Yeah, I mean, I can't agree with Neil's 9.5 out of 10, but just because of some of the complaints I've had about the music and...
Yeah, you know, that just, seems... I mean... But,
you know, my complaints about the world that was sort of under... In my opinion, it was underbaked. There was so much potential in that world map.
Yeah, 9.5 is moving towards, like, this is an all-time game category.
Yeah, but this isn't like a 7 or an 8 either.
Right.
I mean, this is a good game.
I mean, James, you said that, you know, maybe Neil's review score was kind of edging towards, like, an all-time classic. But, you know, I don't know what I would give it. I haven't played enough. I've only played through a couple of worlds at this point. But I would say, you know, if you are a massive fan of 2D Mario, as all of us are, as probably everyone listening to this show is, and you feel that this is the best 2D Mario game in 20 years, which you could easily make that argument. And especially for me, because I'm not as big a fan of Yoshi's Island as other people, or, I mean, I appreciate the innovation of Yoshi's Island, but it feels much less like a Mario game to me than a lot of others. So in terms of a 2D Mario game, I would say it's pretty easy for me to say this is the best since Super Mario World, and that's one of my favorite games ever, and that was over 20 years ago. So I feel like, you know, yeah, maybe it's not the most innovative thing in the world, but it is in a lot of little, important, memorable ways, it is innovative. And I think you do have to give them credit for using a very familiar template to create something that is fresh for the most part.
I saw where you were headed with the best game in 20 years argument. It'd be a lot more compelling if there wasn't a 15-year hole there. I mean, there's a big window where they just didn't make 2D Mario games. So I think it's a hard argument to make from that standpoint. If I went out and wrote a new gospel, I can go, this is the best gospel written in 2,000 years. Well, yes, it is. Congratulations for that. But it's still a piece of garbage.
I don't know how to respond to that.
You can't, because I just won.
Well, let's talk about a different game, Mike.
Sure. So the only other Wii U game I own, because I'm a stingy person who doesn't want to spend lots of money right now, is a Nintendo Land. And, you know, going into this, I wasn't sure how much I was going to enjoy Nintendo Land, because it was sort of a pack-in. Not that pack-ins are necessarily bad, but it was just sort of something I probably wouldn't have gone out and bought if there wasn't that added incentive of it already, you know, being bundled with the version I wanted of the system. But I've enjoyed it more than I thought I would. I've had one or two opportunities to play some multiplayer, and overall it's been pretty fun, aside from the crashing a couple of times. The game, surprisingly, that we enjoyed the least was Chase Me, or whatever the Mario... Yep. Themed one is called now.
Whatever it became.
Yeah. It just sort of, one person was, we were supposed to catch him, but we had no idea where he was. And so we were just sort of aimlessly wandering, looking for this person for 3 minutes.
Where are you?
Having no sense that we were actually ever really close to him. So to be fair, we only had three people. So, you know,
yeah.
Maybe it's a little more balanced with a third person on the team. But, you know, the other ones were a lot of fun, you know, the Luigi Mansion theme game, and I actually really like the Pikmin game, because it's almost like a a dungeon crawler, basically. I mean, it is.
I really want to play that.
And you're, you know, you're attacking, you know, baddies, and it's pretty simple fun. It's not really complicated, but you are, you know, wandering through the areas and sort of solving some simple puzzles and, you know, just fun. You know, it's nothing hard, but it kind of has, you know, I'm trying to think of that. What was that for? Gauntlet? Is that?
Yeah, Gauntlet.
It kind of has a feel kind of like that.
Even as a single player game, it's actually surprisingly enjoyable.
Really?
And I haven't spent a lot of my Nintendo Land time budget on it, but it is enjoyable enough. I would compare it favorably to playing the Zelda Adventure Mode by yourself. It obviously is more fun with multiplayer, but it certainly is functional as a single player game.
Yeah, so I mean, overall, I've had fun. The Zelda game, you know, was fun collaborating on that and, you know, discussing, well, who should be out front and, you know, the archer needs to, you know, plant, you know, focus on certain enemies or certain items that need to be hit, you know, to help the team out. You know, it's good stuff. And, but the single player stuff, man, a lot of that's really difficult. Or maybe I'm just really bad at these games. DK Crash Course is just as much fun / agony as I remembered it being.
Stage 10 is evil.
Yes, it is.
The best part of Crash Course is the fact that almost every single Miiverse pop-in I get is someone talking about how terrible Stage 10 is. It just makes you feel a little bit better about the fact you lost all of your lives there.
Now, when you say Stage 10, you mean like Area 10, right?
Yeah, the part where you have to do the slopes back and forth really quickly to get to the bottom. The very last.
I think when you get through that, and I don't know if there are any stages past that, but whenever you complete that layout, there's actually a whole other stage after that, where you start over at one, but it's totally different layout.
Yep.
Yeah.
I think there's actually two or three of those, but I didn't get very far when I tried it. I've only dabbled in Nintendo Land at this point.
Yeah, so, I've gotten through that once now and gotten to that next set.
Yeah, I don't know how to get through that last area.
I got lucky. I just got tremendously lucky and just did it one time. I was like, ah! Yeah.
So anyway, I mean, it's definitely good fun, definitely challenging. You know, the balloon theme game, you know, is good. It's also very difficult as far as I'm concerned. You know, the thing that really surprised me is I've actually seen my wife pick up the game and play it. Some on her own. I'll come down after doing some stuff on my computer, and she was playing the Yoshi Kart game, which is, you know, fairly simple. It's not, you know, all that engaging, but it's very approachable. And so I guess Nintendo's done something right, because she doesn't really play many video games. You know, she plays Angry Birds on her phone some, and, you know, that's about it.
Well, I played some of the Yoshi Kart thing and Fruit Kart, and I know James described it as dull last week.
it gets harder.
And it's slow paced. There's no time limit. You know, you can kind of, which I actually appreciate. I think, you know, there are too many games have time limits. But the thing I thought Yoshi's Fruit Kart was kind of compelling in a weird way. And not that it's going to end up being my favorite part of the game or anything, but I played it for, you know, 20 minutes or something. And I thought, you know, this is not a perfect execution of the idea, but this is an idea that you've never seen in a game before. It's a way of using the two screens in a really, because you can see certain things on the TV and you can't see them on the touchscreen, but you have to draw the path for Yoshi on the touchscreen. Right. So you're kind of doing this kind of weird visual comparison between the two, and there's some spatial analysis, and there's certain clues in the shadows or in the environment or the pattern of the ground texture that they have that you're trying to use to try to sort of, you know, compare and triangulate where you want to draw the path. And there's also just an accuracy of your ability to draw a line, which becomes important in this game. And it's all this stuff together. And I thought, you know, this isn't amazing or anything, but this is actually a really cool idea that you can only do on the Wii U. And I respect it for that very much, you know?
I need a much better only you can do on Wii U than that.
Well, yeah, no, I mean, there's a lot of things you can only do on Wii U, but this is just one of those things, you know, when they first announced that the system's going to have a touchscreen built into the controller, and we're thinking, what the hell are they going to do with that, you know? And your mind starts to race and all these ideas. This is one that I wouldn't have even have thought of. And I think it's just a really kind of a beautiful use of the dual screen mechanic, where you're trying to look from one to the other and compare them in a way that doesn't involve spotting the difference. So I really respect it, you know.
It seems to me like it was an obvious evolution of the semi-infamous Measure Up demo.
Mm.
But I mean, I played it a bit just today, actually. I mean, it's very similar to what I would expect from just gameplay-wise to a cell phone game.
Yeah.
Not necessarily what you do, because the execution, you can't do it with on a second screen. But it's a very similar concept physically to what you would do. So it is, of the entire suite of the Nintendo Land games, it's probably the simplest.
Yeah.
I think it's the most approachable for someone like my wife, who only plays like Angry Birds and maybe one or two other really simple things on their phone. It's, you know, I think there's a gradient of things just within Nintendo Land of, you know, more gamey games. And yeah. I think that's by design. I think Nintendo's thinking, you know, one of these games will probably appeal to someone, and then they'll try the others, and they might like those too.
Yeah, I mean, because the Zelda one is the counterexample. I mean, it's serious one-to-one swordplay control. Like, more so than I felt like you had with Skyward Sword.
Like, well, it's more focused on the sword.
Yeah, I mean, it's
you know, dividing your attention between moving around and swinging your sword.
It's a much more seriously gamey game.
Then there's like Metroid, which is, you know, just a shooting fest. Which if you're playing with a ship, man, you better have some gaming skills. It's you got to deal with three different things at once. So overall, I've enjoyed Nintendo Land more than I thought. It's not like my favorite game ever, but I think it's a good game to have in my library. And I'll definitely, you know, pull it out every once in a while. Yeah. So, I guess, very briefly, I also wanted to touch on, Balloon Kid, which, almost a follow up to the live show. we had, that game, of course, as one of the games in Radio Trivia. And after, you know, hearing.
And the music was amazing.
The music was amazing. And people had interesting things to say about it. And, you know, playing Nintendo Land with the Balloon Kid or Balloon Trip themed. Many of like, you know what, I'm going to go grab, you know, this game from the virtual console shop or eShop, for 3DS. And so I grabbed it and, I'm enjoying it. It has kind of a weird difficulty curve. Like it doesn't seem hard for the first like five or six stages. And then all of a sudden it's like, bam, oh crap. So it's a weird game. I don't have a good sense of how long it is. Is it only like 9 stages? I don't know. It's a fairly early Game Boy game. So I suspect it's pretty short. Kind of like Kirby's Adventure or Mario Land, but
now did you want to work on that one as well?
I don't know. I think this was actually developed largely by some outsourced company and just published by Nintendo. But
they still had Hypnotica.
They still had Hypnotica do the soundtrack though. Yeah,
the completely insane soundtrack.
Oh yeah, and when you play those songs that I selected aren't like bizarre, obscure songs from that game. Those are like the boss battle, and I mean, I just had to laugh. I was fighting the snowman, and I'm hearing bop 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 beater, beater doot. It's like, dear Lord.
So I might have missed the conversation around Balloon Kid when it first came out on the 3DS Virtual Console. Is it a lot different than Balloon Trip?
I mean, it's basically an extended version of Balloon Trip, but with stages, and you're collecting balloons along the way that are kind of one of your life. I mean, you only have so many balloons, so you have to collect more. It's you got to blow them up if you lose them. And, I mean, there are baddies to avoid, and there's bosses at the end of the levels, and there's a bonus stage, which is...
How do you fight the bosses?
So it is definitely more complicated than Balloon Trip and more interesting. Just, you know, there are different locales for different stages. So
this makes me want to get it. It's probably like $3.
Yeah,
right?
I think it's $3. So, I mean, at that price, I'm like, you know what? I'm going to get it. If, just for the novelty factor alone, and, you know, for $3, it's worth it.
Yeah, even if you don't like it, it's $3, so whatever.
Yeah, maybe it's just my recent experience with Balloon Trip Breeze in Nintendo Land, or just thinking about that awesome Hypnotica soundtrack. But $3 seems like a very easy price to pay for something like this, and yeah, that's pretty tempting. I might have to check this out. I had actually forgotten that this ever came out, because when Mike said he was going to talk about it, I thought maybe he had like gotten some weird import cartridge or had dug out like his original. Like, I didn't even know this was on Virtual Console.
You and everyone else thought on this podcast.
I guess so. Yeah. I mean, I'm going to have to go check this out. So,
yeah, I mean, that's the stuff that I really like Virtual Console for. I mean, a lot of the games that I'd be interested in playing, I already own, and I'm against rebuying stuff I already own unless there's a really good reason to. So it's really these more obscure games that I really like to see on the Virtual Console, especially if they're published by Nintendo.
Yeah. And I feel like sometimes, I mean, I know why they do it, obviously, because the games that aren't obscure are the ones that sell more copies. I just wish they would do it more often.
Yeah, I mean, I want to show my support for Virtual Console, but I'm just not going to buy Mario Golf again because I have a perfectly good copy that has a save file on it with, you know, a beefed up character.
I think Nintendo's still got a lot to prove that they actually give a shit about Virtual Console on 3DS because, you know, they're releasing stuff like Ninja Gaiden for NES, which I don't think anyone really wants on the 3DS, and they still haven't done Wario Land 2, even though Wario Land 3 just came out in Europe. Yeah. So they, especially Nintendo of America, they've got a lot of work to do on their support for that platform.
Yeah, and but it doesn't give me high hopes for Wii U.
Every now and then they're going to put out something awesome, and you know, like Mole Mania, which is a game I haven't spent enough time with, but my time, and I bought it because of you guys talking about it, and it's pretty fantastic.
Yeah, it's kind of an amazing game.
Yeah, I'm nibbling on that.
I didn't even know what that was before a couple years ago. Like, I knew the name, but I didn't know that was a Miyamoto joint. I didn't know that was, like, even really a first-party Nintendo game. I didn't know it was supposed to be good. I didn't know what kind of game it was. Virtual Console, that's what it's for.
Yeah,
you know?
I mean, I don't want to buy games I've already played 100 times. I want new. I mean, if you look at my Virtual Console collection on my Wii, I guarantee you it's the smallest one out of anybody here.
The reality is a very, very small majority of people who own a 3DS even know that it plays Game Boy games. So I obviously Nintendo's going to release Super Mario Land and sell a whole bunch of copies of it because that's an extremely well-known game. But I guarantee you most of the stuff they release on Virtual Console, they're speaking to a minority of the crowd, and I think it behooves them to cater to more hardcore people like us because we're awaiting this stuff. We are ready with money in hand saying, please release these cool, obscure games, and we will evangelize to each other, not just through the podcast, but through sheer word of mouth and message boards and whatever, that, yo, this awesome game just came out on Virtual Console. You should totally pick it up, even if you've never heard of it before. And the people we tell that to are people who are actually responsive to that kind of word of mouth and are willing to check out a game that they're not familiar with because people on the internet told them it was really cool and they should. So that's what Virtual Console is most appealing to. And it's easy to say, well, they should release Donkey Kong Country on Wii Virtual Console because, yes, my sister owns that, okay, on her Wii. And she bought 5 Virtual Console games ever, and they were probably on the same day. But that ultimately, I've spent way more on Virtual Console than she did. I'm worth 10 or 20 other Wii owners in terms of what I spent on Virtual Console. And so it really does behoove them to appeal to me. Yeah. It really does. And I'm not just saying that because I'm selfish. It's good financial sense for them to release things that only I would care about or people like.
Has anyone bought the Rayman game for Virtual Console? Because I played that Game Boy Color game.
No interest.
When it first came out. I remember it actually being pretty good.
Do you mean the Game Boy Color?
Game Boy Color Rayman game.
Oh, I thought you said Rain Man first. I was like, wait, what?
Yeah.
I would.
Rayman game. Yeah.
There's a lot to be desired for the 3DS Virtual Console. But I'm going to go next with new business. And I've played now a couple hours of Assassin's Creed 3 on my Wii U, of course, which has been an interesting experience. It's the only chance I've had to use my controller Pro. And that has gone pretty well. I am enjoying that controller. And the difference in weight between that and the gamepad is very significant. It weighs probably about as much as a PS3 controller, which is to say almost nothing. But just last night, I was playing some more Assassin's Creed 3 and started to really appreciate the ability to just play it on the gamepad. I was like sitting at my computer desk, surfing the web, watching some giant bomb quick looks and, you know, random shit like that, and just kept on playing it. And that's really nice. And, you know, I know that the gamepad screen is not high definition. That's a technical term based on the number of pixels that it has. But actually, The thing about it, you know, the weird thing is that the display itself, I mean, the gamepad itself, as we know, isn't generating the graphics. It's just beaming them in from right. the console.
It's just, and the it's console, just a receiver.
And the console is still producing the same graphics that it would for your TV. It's just sending them to the gamepad, and then it's getting downscaled a little bit, basically, so that it shows on the screen. But what that means is the visual that you get from the console to the gamepad is still really sharp, really, really detailed, really, you know, high geometry, very clear textures on people's faces. And like, it was in watching some of the cutscenes for Assassin's Creed 3, where you could see these incredibly detailed faces on these people, and you see these beautiful environments that are being kind of like warped in through the virtual reality simulation that's, you know, part of the game's world. And it looks amazing. It certainly looks better on my TV because my TV has a better display. But to see this on the gamepad is kind of shocking because it is a very much a modern game, and the graphics may not be high definition, but they are very high quality. And it doesn't look like anything you've ever seen before on a thing that you could hold in your hand. I mean, maybe there are iPad games that look like this. Maybe Infinity Blade looks like this on an iPad. And now you're playing it on a thing that has full joysticks, full buttons, everything you would want.
Yeah.
And I sat here for like 2 hours and played Assassin's Creed 3 at my computer desk with the console being in another room. And it was pretty awesome.
You know, I had a very similar experience playing Mario in bed. I mean, I just sort of busted it out. And the signal cut in and out a little bit, but overall, it was very playable and a lot of fun. And you know what it reminded me of? It's like the Nomad. Remember the Sega Nomad?
Oh my God, really?
Yeah. Well, it's a console.
The battery
you can hold
life
in your
is
hand.
A lot better.
It is, except it doesn't have how many batteries?
Well, that I don't remember. I only play it once or twice at a friend's house.
17C batteries that last an hour.
But it actually does kind of remind me of that experience of it's a real console, a modern console, but I'm holding it in my hands. It's kind of cool.
The Nomad was a Sega Genesis packed into a handheld. So it was literally a console in your hands.
Literally, they just squeezed that thing in there. I mean, they're just like...
And you're right. That is a good comparison. And it's not something that we've really seen in a long time. You see stuff like PSP and then Vita. The philosophy is, let's make console-like games that you can play portably. But ultimately, it doesn't really pan out that way. The games feel kind of watered down or compressed in some way, or they've taken out a joystick, or they've made whatever compromise in order to make it run on this handheld system. And then they do some visual things that kind of fool your eyes into thinking, oh, this looks almost as good as the console game, but it really doesn't play as well. And that's the thing about the gamepad. It very easily you can tell it does not look as good as it does on your HDTV, but it plays the same. And that's the important thing. And that's kind of the magic. And when you play it, you can feel it. It's like, holy shit, this is not a console-like experience that you get with a Sony handheld. This is literally a console experience. And that makes all the difference. And you have all the controls there that you would want in order to play it. I'm really enjoying that. As far as the game, Assassin's Creed 3, I still am actually like just now getting out of the sort of intro section of the game that you've heard people talk about. It is rather long. It's 3 or 4, maybe even 5 hours long, probably about 3 or 4 hours for me to get through it. And you're playing as a character who is not the main character of the game.
It's
a prologue.
Kingdom Hearts'd it.
Well, it's not fair to say that it's this 4 hour long tutorial. That is not fair. It's not correct. There are some tutorial type missions in there where they're teaching you to do something for the first time. In some cases, these are things you haven't even done in previous Assassin's Creed games. So it's fair. They have to teach you at some point, and at least they do it within the context of the mission and not here's a virtual reality, you know, here's a VR sim for you to do it. Now go play the game. They do it in the game, which is good. And there is a lot of storytelling. There's a lot of talking. There's a lot of kind of just walking or running around to get from place to place. And it's slow. And I think if you hear people complain about the beginning of Assassin's Creed 3 just being kind of poorly paced or just really slow to get started, that is legitimate. It's slower than I would like. It takes a little bit longer to get to sort of the meat of the game, the part that you really care about, you know, the American Revolution and the main character of the game, and you get into some of the Native American parts that are probably a little more interesting than just running around a colonial Boston. And yeah, it takes a couple hours to get there, but it's not like you're not playing the game up to that point. You are playing an Assassin's Creed game up to that point. It's just with a different character and somewhat less freedom maybe to roam around and, you know, explore the totality of the game world that they give you. But it's still fun. It's still, you know, there's a couple of frustrating points in the missions, but I expect that will endure throughout the game. It's very much a mission-based game, and if you don't do things in the right order, or, you know, sometimes it's just they expect you to follow a certain path, but they give you a lot of freedom to take other paths. And if you take those other paths, it's either going to be impossible or just a lot more difficult to complete the mission. And then maybe you do it three times, and on the fourth, you accidentally take the path that they thought would be obvious that you would take in the first place. And then it just goes really smoothly and you're like, wow, why did I ever have trouble with this? It's that kind of experience. You've probably seen it in other games. They haven't solved that, unfortunately, but the game looks absolutely fantastic. And, the story is certainly very interesting. In fact, like 4 hours in, there was this amazing revelation that I said out loud, oh my God. So I think they're doing some pretty good stuff with the storytelling, and I'm very excited to play more, especially now that I am at the point where I'm starting to control Connor, who is ultimately the main character of the game. So yeah, I like it. So the other game I played the most of this past week is I went back to Paper Mario Sticker Star, because I had dropped off of it for a couple of weeks while I was dealing with Wii U and other things. And I had sort of gotten stuck in, or not stuck, but I had sort of lost momentum on the game in the third world.
Surprise, surprise. I'm sorry. I haven't played this game, but it's a Paper Mario game. You lost momentum.
Right. Well, the good thing is I
cynical.
Found it.
God!
I don't hate the Paper Mario series, but I have yet to play a Paper Mario game that doesn't have spots where things screech to a halt due to backtracking or some bizarre
level design concept.
I knew where to go, more or less. The problem is that the game is actually, it's almost like the game is intentionally set up to create this situation, because the game has 5 worlds. That's obvious from the very beginning. And the first, second, fourth, and fifth worlds all have about 5 or 6 stages within them. And the stages are not that long, and they're kind of on this, you know, very, very simple kind of overworld map, and they're easy to move around in. So you feel like you get a sense of, okay, this is about how long it would take me to play through a world. And so I can sort of, from that, I have at least a feeling of how long it's going to take me to get through this game. You get to world 3, it is literally more than twice as large as any other world in the game. It's gigantic, and all the levels look very similar to each other, and you're chasing these segments of Wiggler, you know, the caterpillar character from Super Mario World. It's this giant Wiggler, and the different sections of his body have been scattered by Kamek, the wizard, the Koopa wizard, and they're scattered among all these levels, and you have to go find them. Mm. Well, once you find one, it'll run away from you and go to another level. And so now you have to go to some other level, which you may or may not have played through before, and search all over the fucking place and try to find this thing. And there's 12 stages in this world, and you have to do this hunt for Wiggler segments like 4 or 5 times. It's really interminable. It's not even that it's so repetitive. It just takes so long to get through this quest that you totally lose sight of what is the whole point of this game, because you get so enshrined in this side quest almost of trying to find these Wiggler segments just so you can proceed. So that's where I got stuck. I'm sure that's where a lot of people are going to get stuck, but I'm telling you, it is possible to get through it. It's not even that hard. You really just have to spend the time with it. And I'm finally completely finished with World 3, and I can move on to the stuff after that, which I think is going to be just a cakewalk. I mean, it's these next couple worlds are so much shorter, and they're in totally different kinds of environments, and it's going to make the whole game feel fresh all over again. So I spent literally like probably 6 or 8 hours just finishing World 3. Mm-hmm. And that's the progress that I made, but that's the key progress. And I think if you make it over that hump, which I now have, it's not going to be too difficult to finish the game. And So I'm looking forward to that. I've at this point I've played it for probably 20 hours or maybe close to that, and I do still really like it. It's not that the game gets worse at that point. It's just it's a pacing problem. They really should have split up that world into two, given you something a little bit different to do halfway through. It probably would have helped a lot, but I still really enjoy it. I have my issues with Sticker Star, but I certainly think it's an improvement. I'd say it's a major improvement over Super Paper Mario. And I think overall it's more interesting and just kind of more exciting and fun to play through than even Thousand Year Door. So it might be my favorite Paper Mario game so far. It's certainly a very unusual game, and there's not anything remotely like it on 3DS. And it may not be strictly an RPG, but it's certainly of RPG length, and it has a lot of RPG systems, and I think if you're a fan of that genre, you owe it to yourself to check it out. There's not enough games even remotely like this on 3DS, and I think it's a good choice. And it's a very charming game. It has lots of great ideas. The music is superb. So there's a lot to like about it. I'm looking forward to beating it sometime in the next month or so, probably. We haven't gotten to James yet, and new business is running a little bit long already because it's that time of year. So I think we're going to take a break, come back, let James finish his new business in the second segment, and then we're going to do kind of a smorgasbord of various little topics that have been popping up lately. So stick around, and we'll be back in a minute.
Here's a quick look at the best original content at our website, now playing at NintendoWorldReport.com.
So we have an interview with Hugo Smits of Goodbye Galaxy Games, conducted by Tyler Alou. Get inside the mind of a DSiWare developer with an interview from the developer of Flipper, Flush the Goldfish, and World-Changing Ace Mythician, which is a math game starring a koala, mate.
We also have a feature, Nintendo World Report's 2012 Holiday Gaming Guide by Philip Stortzum. Need a gift idea for the gamer in your life? Personal experience tells me you should ask them! I do not need a third copy of Star Fox 64. But if you insist on playing Koi, our guide should at least help you find a game that's up to the task. We also have a review of Skylanders Giants, again, this time for the Wii U, by Neil. Another week, another Skylanders review from Neil. Guess what? He likes it. Feed your plastic figure addiction in HD.
We have a review of Tank, Tank, Tank for the Wii U, by Patrick Barnett. To be short, no, no, no!
Yeah, that was probably my first Wii U game at E3. No.
That was also my last N64 game.
We have a video review, Little Inferno, by Jared Rosenberg and Tyler Olu. Are you ready to confront the unsettling imagery of Little Inferno, now in video form? Well, here's your chance. Enjoy the best fireplace game to date.
And finally, we have a review for Aeroporter on the 3DS by Tyler Olu. To be a baggage handler, the sexy, fast-paced life of mass transit logistics officer is one of privilege and responsibility. It's also the chance to rip off Johnny's luggage. Thankfully, this experience has been captured as one of the 5 games in Guild 01, now available on the North American eShop. You heard last week James mention that Yute Saito is a genius. You can experience that genius for yourself in Aeroporter.
I'm amazed this came out here.
So be sure to check out all of this great original content, plus the latest news and a lots more over at NintendoWorldReport.com. All right, everyone, we are back, and we haven't done this in a really long time, but we're now going to wrap up new business with James, who got bumped from the first segment.
Yeah.
So, James, take as much time as you need, sir, to talk about what you've been playing.
I don't know there's enough time in the world to talk about this, but I've been decided that it was time to begin the process of playing through Zero's Escape, Virtue's Last Reward, which is it's kind of a hard game to get yourself ready to play, because having been through 999 and understanding what this game is, you sort of have to get yourself in the right state of mind before you go into it. But for those who missed the previous discussion of this game and don't know the history of it, it's a old-style adventure game with broken up by puzzles. So basically it's an ebook with puzzles in the middle of it. The basic really, really high-level story is there are 9 people who have been imprisoned in a facility of some description who can only progress through essentially solving puzzles and going through locked doors. Also, occasionally, their lives are put at risk. That's basically the whole premise of the game. At the moment, I have played through the game as far as it'll let me go a few times. Now, one of the things about this game is that there's a... I believe the total count is 22 endings, which is a large number. Not all of them are
satisfying.
Yeah. Some of them are somewhat abrupt.
The Reptite ending is really cool. You have to tell your friends about it.
You beat me to every reference.
I'm sure there is an ending that is regarded as canon, as there was in the first game. And I'm sure, as in the first game, it will be incredibly convoluted to get it. But the game itself, I'm 6-7, but 2 endings through it at this point. Every time you play through the game, you kind of experience a different path, so different puzzles. You can skip stuff you've already seen, which is tremendously helpful. You can essentially... The idea is that as you go through these different endings, you learn about the individual characters in the party, and you can sort of piece together all of the mysteries about, you know, who everyone here is, why you all were brought to this really horrendous facility, who is behind everything. You know, you also manage to, as the game constantly prompts you, seek a way out and somehow reach salvation. At the moment, I've got through 2, so I'm still in the "what the fuck is going on" phase of the game.
All right, so let me just take stock of what you're saying here. You've played through the game twice, and you still don't know what's going on.
Not really.
That's fair to say.
Like, I mean, like, at the high level, yes, I get. They're trapped in this building. There's puzzle doors they have to solve. If they don't do them, they'll be killed.
But yeah, as for why and what's really going on under the surface, and what are the relations of these characters, very much in the dark?
There are individual characters I have information on at this point. Maybe not their full backstories, but some of them.
Okay. And every time you beat the game, you unravel this mystery a little bit more.
Pretty much.
This is definitely an unusual structure.
It's like a whodunit or something. I don't know. It's weird.
One thing they added to this game versus its predecessor is there's just a tree of plot lines that shows you all the branching paths, and you can just sort of jump down them.
Is it more like Radiant Historia?
No, because you can't just jump anytime you want. It's like as you're progressing down a line, if you're going through a bunch of stuff you've already gone through, you can just hit a button and jump straight to it.
This sounds more like kind of like after you've beaten Wario Land 2. Or is that like, it's not like a world map, but it's sort of like a timeline?
Yeah, kind of.
Yeah.
So I can really only jump on the 2 timelines I've run through at this point. But when I'm playing again next time, I can just jump straight to where we have the first major point of diverting plot lines and not have to play all the beginning. I can just jump straight to it, be there, done.
Just like Wario Land 2.
And just pick up where I left off. Or pick up where I last split the plot line, and that'll helps you get through the stuff faster. So, like I said, right now I'm in this position of trying to figure out what the hell is going on. And it is really enjoyable, in part because I'm not experiencing the same puzzles yet. I know from the original game there's a point where you start hitting the same puzzles over and over and it gets kind of tiresome, but the ability to jump this stuff will make that a lot easier. I am really enjoying it. The plot is absurd in the extreme. So far, dealt with murder victims, robots, what was the other thing? Just all kinds of just completely weird and insane stuff that every time you come across, you're like, wait, huh?
Well, yeah, like the The original game had like references to Kurt Vonnegut, Cat's Cradle, you know, things yeah. like that. Very, very obscure or, well, pop culture references. But they integrated them in the game as if, like, oh, this happened in real life. There yes. was actually a mummy on the Titanic.
Yes.
And if you order water molecules a certain way, you could destroy the entire planet.
Yeah. Or the water would freeze at room temperature.
Well, that's what I just said.
Yeah. Well, yes. If you did all the water molecules, you would destroy the planet. Yes.
Yes.
But the game itself is just crazy into extreme levels I can't put into place. But it's really enjoyable in that because they have no regard for science or any kind of realism in that respect, they can basically push this as far as they want, which is tremendous. I've actually really enjoyed playing the game so far. It's frustrating when you're going through and you think you've got someone somewhat figured out, and then the game just totally blows up your perception of that character. But at the same time, it's sort of rewarding just to get there. It's in many ways, it's like reading a really, really insane mystery novel, and how characters will continually morph as you progress through it. And the complexities of the individuals begin to come to surface. Right now, I'm reasonably convinced that someone's a robot and that there are dead people among us. That either of those options is entirely open to being possible. And I am thrilled that that's the case. It's hard to recommend this game to people who didn't play the original because it is so different. It's so different from pretty much anything I've been through as a game, that it's hard to say, well, yes, you'll love this game. But I really am enjoying it. So I'm very happy with the purchase. Let's put it that way.
All right. Cool.
I will say the writing is... Well, it's voice acted, which is a plus and a minus.
Why is it a minus?
There's one character in particular, the antagonist, who is tremendously obnoxious. Now, it's by design, and they succeeded at the highest level at making this character obnoxious, but they're really obnoxious. So there's this constant of every time I talk going, God kill me. I don't want to be here anymore. But there are lots of puns, so if puns hurt you, this game will make you suffer badly.
Hear that, Greg?
Yeah, there are some hellacious puns in here, and you're just like, no, I don't want to do this anymore.
I've heard something about cats.
Yeah, one of the main character, for whatever reason, whenever he talks about cats, talks in cat puns. The antagonist is a computer-generated image of a rabbit driven by AI who makes rabbit puns constantly.
What?
Yeah. It's weird. Yeah, the antagonist itself, well, I mean, its physical representation is just a rabbit on a screen.
That's not Bunny.
That talks to you. Yeah, that's the kind of stuff it would say. I don't know. It's very odd. But we'll see. I've probably got about 20 hours left with it, so.
20 more hours?
You only have 20 more hours left with this handheld game, James?
Well, it's got 24 different endings, so, and I've got two of them, so.
But you can skip over so much.
Yeah, I know, but my guess is that some of the endings you get access to later have more gameplay behind them that I won't be able to skip. Huh. That's how it went with the first game was.
Yeah.
Some of the endings you got later on pushed you further into the game.
Oh, that must be exciting, though, when you find those.
Yeah. Because, I mean, there's this point of like, well, I'm done. The first time I was playing the game, I hit a deadlock. And basically, multiple characters were greatly imperiled at that point. Like, their lives were severely in danger. And then just, your character passes out and wakes up at the start of the game again. It's like, what the fuck just happened? And which is weird in and of itself. And I've only seen this happen one time so far. I'm like, huh? How the hell did I get here? And it's kind of weird trippiness that the game references itself the first time you're playing it. Like, wait, I don't want to be here anymore. I'm so confused. But I'm hoping that this doesn't happen again because I'm not sure my brain can take it.
It's probably going to happen 20 more times.
The whole time the character keeps mentioning this is all very deja vu for him. I'm like, wow, how many times have you been trapped in a facility with a poisonous wristwatch? Well, the answer may be more than one. Oh, I don't know. It's weird. It's awesome, and the puzzles are... Some of them are kind of obtuse, but they're really... A lot of them are really very good. But it's weird.
What are the puzzles like? Are we talking like Professor Layton puzzles?
No. They're more like... So you're trapped in a very small room, usually. So there's not like a lot of having to wander around the whole game world. And basically, your entire objective is to find the passcode to open up a vault that has the key to get out of the room. And it's basically combining things you find in the world to give you clues to get more stuff that's been locked away to eventually just getting the passcode for the vault.
Very classic adventure game.
So, yeah, it is. But unlike a lot of them where there was a huge area you could have to wander out, it's a very compact area. Everything's just there. You might have to be a little finicky with the details to find it. It's just some of the puzzles themselves can be somewhat obtuse. There's a puzzle that involves you mixing drinks at a bar, and there's what seems to be a disconnected puzzle at the other end of the room, but really what it's doing is it's telling you the ingredients for the drinks. So, in the end, it's just it's like there's this writing on the wall that you can see suddenly, and you have to realize, oh, that's telling me how to put the drinks together. Hmm. And then you go back and put the drinks together, and you get the passcode for the vault, and you can leave, and everything's better. It's really strange, and I haven't had to resort to guides yet, but I've been really close a few times. I have no reason to suspect that it won't happen eventually. Because, I mean, I have been at the edge of giving up a couple times. And then it's like, oh my god, I get it now. There is a secondary mode where you can set it to easier. And the other characters that you're in your party. So the group of nine keeps splitting up and to go through different areas of the facility. And they'll give you hints if you flip it to this easier mode. You can do it puzzle by puzzle. The downside of doing that is there's a secondary objective in each room that gives you more background info on the characters and the world. And if you flip it to easy, if you flip it to easy, that background info you get isn't as good. I've been avoiding that because I need every shred of info I can get in this world.
Well, yeah, why else would you play the game if you didn't care about the characters and the...
Well, and in some cases, it's giving you info before the plot gives it to you, where you go, oh, I know how to handle this now. And in some cases, it just like dangles something out in front of you to tease you. And you're like, oh, it doesn't help me at all. Fuck you, game.
Oh, man.
It is really fun. I find that I can't play it for extended periods of time, more than an hour or two. It's a very dark game in every respect of the word. You know, it's a very macabre game to begin with. It's very much set up like a Saw game without the graphic murders. I mean, it's essentially a group of people have been trapped in a building with the intent to escape, knowing that their lives are currently going to be imperiled constantly. I mean, it's a pretty dark topic, and the people have died so far, so it's not, you know, just like, well, yeah, you can quote die, but nobody's actually going to die in this game. There have already been deaths in one of my playthroughs, so it's a lot to do in any one given moment. I'm going to get called a wuss in the talkbacks. That's fine. In my first playthrough of this game, when it imperiled those two characters at the very end, I mean, it made it sound like they had very slim chances of surviving, and the game resets itself, and I'm back in the first room, and I think to myself, oh my god. Oh, I don't know if I want to, because one of the characters in particular is, I mean, without going too much spoilers, is a child. I mean, it's on the box cover. It's not really a spoiler. And you think to yourself, Jesus, I don't want to do that. I don't want to go through that again. That's just not fun. And it took me about a day to go back through the start of the game again, because I was just like, ugh. I don't want to be here anymore.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. I know I'm approaching the end of the current playthrough I'm on, and I'm really, really freaked out at this point because I suspect that something truly unpleasant is about to happen.
Yeah. I mean, but I'm so glad stuff like this exists because, let's face it, I mean, most video games are pretty they're either very cheerful and colorful and happy-go-lucky like Mario, or they're extremely violent, but in a way that's kind of flippant, you know, like a Call of Duty game.
Bulletstorm.
Or even Assassin's Creed. We're going around murdering people, but there's no consequences. They don't make you feel bad about doing so. That's just, in fact, they try to make you feel good about doing so.
Right.
So I'm glad that there are games that explore other aspects of human psychology. And I think it's even more impressive when they work, and it sounds like this one does. But when they work, because we have this bias, we have this predisposition towards video games that they should be fun and entertaining in a very light way.
Right.
And I think, and because it's interactive, it requires your input to move forward and to progress. And so to craft an experience that on the one hand makes you feel really icky and not good and emotionally drained, and yet find some way mechanically or maybe emotionally that ties you into doing the next thing that you have to do to bring even more pain on yourself.
Yeah.
Is really interesting. And I think it's probably really difficult to pull off. And I don't want this to be widespread. I don't want this to become fad in gaming, but I'm glad that there's this weird niche of games that do this or that try to do it. And they're starting to get really good.
Yeah. I think it's something that the first time you attempt it as a game developer, you're always going to struggle with, because it's easy to make something grimdark and it just seem like you've gone way off the rails.
Or that you're trying too hard.
Yeah. I mean, this game tries really hard, but at the same time, there's all these really contrived scenarios through which you could be killed. But in general, the deaths tend to be much more pedestrian, or the perceived danger of death seems to be a much more pedestrian cause. Someone gets sick. Someone hurts themselves. Someone, you know, person-on-person violence. It's not, you know, the fact that there's this effectively someone who's made himself a god who can reach down and kill people. While that threat is there, that's usually not what the current fear is. It's a much more human fear that you're dealing with at most times.
Yeah.
The god role was really just to keep you from just sitting down and going, nope, we're not going any further into this. You can't make us. It's just more of a thing to push the characters along down the path than it is the ever-present fear.
All right. So that's James's new business, everybody. So let's move on now into our – it's not really a feature this week. It's just more – I mean, we had a couple ideas that didn't really pan out. So we ended up getting kind of a lot of smaller ideas and figured, well, let's kind of combine these up. So we've got a few topics here to talk about. We're not going to spend a ton of time on any of them, but, you know, think of it as being similar to listener mail. We've got a few different, questions or ideas here that we're going to spend a few minutes on. In discussing preparation for the show, Mr. John Lindemann, recommended that we talk a little bit about the end this month of Nintendo Power Magazine and whether it's related or not, the future of video game magazines and even websites. I think websites aren't even all that modern or current of a format anymore. Mm-hmm. Not saying they're going away. They don't face the same kind of pressures as magazines do, but they're certainly probably not the first thing you think of when you think about getting your gaming news, just as magazines haven't been for a long time. But let's start with Nintendo Power. I mean, it is obviously a little sad for a lot of us that Nintendo Power is going away. I think at the same time, I personally am surprised they existed for this long. And I haven't read it in years. And we could ask Guillaume what he thinks, because you recently subscribed to it, right?
I recently subscribed to it. So that hurts in its own way.
Are they filling out the rest of your subscription with another magazine?
No, they're going to be issuing a refund for
really,
you know, okay, prorated whatever is left in my subscription. So I've received 3 issues, and at some point, I guess the check is going to be in the mail. So that at least there's that.
Take it to Vegas.
I have the last issue in my hands right now. The subscribers have received it a little bit earlier than it's going to hit newsstands. It's very nice. I'm sure people have already seen the leaked cover. If they haven't, they can look at the chapter art. Like, they're closing the loop and it's a claymation, well, not claymation, it's a clay Mario jumping on Goombas being pursued by Bowser, which is a callback to the very first issue, which had a Mario 2 cover made in clay. This one is much better looking, by the way.
Are the colors right on his overalls?
Yep. Yeah, good. They didn't, you know, the callback doesn't go as far as reproducing the mistakes of the original. It's a very, you know, I've only had time to flip through it quickly. There's understandably a lot of navel gazing, you know, like there's a lot of, oh, the best Nintendo Power moments. There's a nice favorite games of all time list, 285 games.
Whoa.
Yeah, the you know, this is the 285th issue. There's some, you know, like the current editors, some words from them, some words from WayForward developers, or Chris Kohler is in the letters section.
Nice.
No, it's very neat, and I'm sure, you know, a lot of people will go pick it up just because it's the last issue.
Well, yeah, I'm thinking about it myself, and I haven't read Nintendo Power for years. I was a subscriber for a long time, and I'll just briefly wax nostalgic for a sec and talk about the way I started reading Nintendo Power. I might have told this story a long time ago on the podcast, but it's certainly been a while if I have. When I was a kid, my friend Wesley, back from like kindergarten, literally kindergarten, he had a Nintendo before I did, and so I discovered Nintendo at his house. We would play Metroid and Mario, Mario 2, a lot of that kind of stuff. It was the, you know, like 86, 87 type era. And he had Nintendo Power magazines, and I would read them cover to cover over and over and over. I would borrow the magazines from him to take them home. And, you know, we were learning to read. I mean, I literally partially learned to read from spending a hell of a lot of time with Nintendo Power magazine. That's no joke. That's no exaggeration. I learned a lot of words. I learned a lot about video games. I learned a lot about life from those early issues. And these were like the really early issues with the grisly, you know, Castlevania 2 cover and all the weird crap they used to do. I remember very distinctly reading through that first issue with the Mario 2 cover over and over again. And the magazine was a mess. Like, if you go back and read those issues, they're really kind of unprofessional and goofy, and they're blatantly promotional for Nintendo. They're not that informative.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, they were the party press.
But it's also like a goofy 1980s kids magazine, you know, at the same time. Like, it's not written very well. It's full of like really bad jokes. And, you know, that's what it was at the time. I didn't know any better. It was probably the first magazine I ever read. Literally. And when we were in first grade, I had a birthday, so this would have been in probably January 1990. No, this was in kindergarten. I think this would have been January 1988. And for my birthday, Wesley handed me two or three issues of the magazine. And I thought he was giving me those issues. And I was thrilled. And I thought, I'm going to take these home and read them all over again. And I thought it was such a great birthday gift, because he knew I was obsessed with them and he knew I loved to borrow them and read them. So I thought he was just giving me these issues. It took me like a couple days later. I was talking to him about it. It turns out what he meant, what I think his mom sort of gave him this idea to kind of present it in this way. And maybe he didn't totally gather the details of it. I mean, we were kindergartners. What he meant was that they were giving me a subscription to Nintendo Power, and the issues that he handed me were just meant to sort of represent that.
Nice.
So and that's when I learned the word subscription. I mean, I'm not shitting you. These are formative years here. And I didn't know what subscription meant. And I was like, wait, they mail you Nintendo Power? That's the coolest thing I've ever heard. So from that moment, for the next probably 5 years, the best day of every month of every year of my childhood was the day that Nintendo Power magazine, so I'm getting choked up. Jeez. it was a really big deal. And, I obsessed over them and I shared them with friends, and we learned every single little thing. And you know, this was before the internet. This was literally before Electronic Gaming Monthly existed, certainly long before I knew about it. This was video gaming. Everything that we knew about Nintendo and about video games came from this magazine. And yes, it was very one-sided. It was very biased. It was very limited scope of information, but that's all I knew. And I cherished it. So I'm amazed that they've stuck around this long. And, you know, I wish all those people the best. I don't really know the people who write for it now, and I don't really have any strong connection to the content now. But the history and the tradition and the legacy of that magazine is this podcast, and it's the website. It's everything that we do. I wouldn't have started The Informant. I wouldn't have gone to work on at Planet GameCube, and I wouldn't have, you know, I wouldn't have started hosting this podcast if it weren't for Nintendo Power. So it's a really big deal. And, you know, if you didn't grow up with it like I did, it's hard to appreciate, and there's probably not really any good way for you to go back and experience that, because even if you go back and read the issues, it won't mean the same thing to you that it did to me. But I'm sure everybody has memories like this, had things that influenced them when they were children. They got them into video games that made them excited about games that weren't even out yet. And yeah. And that looking to the future and using your imagination, and just, you know, this was before you could hear people talk about games on the internet. You just had to read people write about games on paper, and using your imagination to project what it would feel like to play these games that you're reading about was one of the best things about video games.
Yeah, like the simple concept of information being hard to come by is going to be foreign to a lot of people very soon.
Yeah.
You know, like in the past, well, since the advent of the internet.
That's a good thing. It's better this way.
Yeah, but like there's no, you can't really, like you won't be able to express that concept to someone, you know, like there used to be a time when you would devour these tidbits of information because that's all you had. And, you know, like you couldn't go out and find more info about, you know, let's say, Ogre Battle. Like one of the issues that I remember, I remember reading about Ogre Battle on the SNES. No store around me sold it, you know, and I was still reading the tips, even though I didn't have the game, because it was...
No store around anyone sold that game, Guillaume.
Yeah. So I understand where you're coming from, Guillaume. I don't fully agree with it from the standpoint of there will always be a product that is on the horizon that we don't know much about. There isn't much information out there, period, on the internet, because they've said very little about this product. And so from that standpoint, I think there's always going to be some aspect of this, you know, scrounging for what tidbits you have, but it's still not the same. I agree. It's not something where you're looking forward to this publication coming in the mail that once a month is going to have a treasure trove of information. You know, it's different, you know?
Yeah. Once information gets out, everyone picks it up and everyone spreads it. And so you don't have like this one source that you can go to that you learn about a dozen games all at once. You're probably going to hear from it on Twitter or on Facebook from a friend, or, you know, on one of the websites if you happen to read them, those. So yeah, like information is everywhere, and it just, it's not the same anymore.
Well, you know, for that reason, look, the writing's been on the wall for a long time, and gaming magazines haven't really been viable for a really long time. And they're going to be less viable in the future. And I know there is a niche audience who is interested in a boutique kind of publication industry that will print a magazine for a very small dedicated reader base because they like to hold something in their hands and they like to flip through the pages and they like these sensory inputs that have little to do with the content on the page. And there's some people who like the design of the page layouts and the high, you know, the high definition artwork and screenshots and the way that they're arranged with the text. And I'm, you know, I can't take anything away from that. If that's what you appreciate about magazines, then then you will probably find something, or something will come up. I mean, there was recently a Kickstarter for a Nintendo dedicated magazine, and they're catering to a very, very small audience who doesn't care whether this magazine has the latest information or has the best reviews. They don't really care about the information in it. They care that it is a magazine, and that's the most important feature, and they care that a magazine exists. And I'm sure there'll be something for those people, but quite frankly, the solvency of gaming magazines up to now in 2012, if you told me 5 years ago there would still actually even be gaming magazines, I think I'd punch you in the face. It's amazing that they still exist, but they exist because of this artificially created cycle that is primarily focused, at least in America, around Game Informer, where they sell magazines to people coming through stores primarily because they want people want discounts on used games. It has little to do with getting the magazine. That just comes along with it. And then they use the giant subscriber base that they get from that, from essentially giving the magazine away for free, bundled in with other benefits that people actually care about. And they use the giant circulation numbers to secure exclusive revelations from publishers, which is a very shady kind of arrangement in the first place. But the only reason magazines are still relevant at all is because they make these deals with publishers to get information. And so content is held back for magazines that could have been put on the internet or released in any number of ways much earlier than that. So that's the only reason magazines still exist. Back in the 80s and even in the 90s, magazines were the best way to get this information out. It's not that they had set up all these crazy deals with a bunch of game companies to get exclusives. That was the exclusive way to get information about your game out there. And so they were collecting everything that they could, you know, and they actually had to filter themselves. They were getting more news and screenshots and preview type data from publishers than they could actually print. And so they had to be selective. And now it's more like they work these deals years in advance to get cover stories, and then they fill the magazine up. The rest of it's bullshit. And the only reason anybody even buys a magazine anymore is for the cover story. And the cover story is kind of a, you know, greasy hands, you know, you rub your back, I'll rub yours kind of thing. And that is not going to last forever. At some point, people just won't care enough, or publishers will realize that there are just better outlets for it, and they won't care about circulation numbers anymore. So I think the clock is ticking, for better or worse. And, you know, Nintendo Power, frankly, you know, whatever. It there's a lot of business shit in there that I don't even really care about, but They do have an emotional resonance with gamers that I think most other magazines don't. Mm-hmm. So that's why we're talking about it.
Yeah, I mean, I remember the last issue I got, which was...
Mine would have been N64 era.
Mine was the issue where they detailed the Game Boy Color version of Crystallis.
Mm.
Which they neglected to point out will lead you to be killed by many enemies you cannot see off screen. Next game. But to me, like, there are a handful of memories I have of that game, of that magazine that are great. There are a handful I have that are just like, I hate you so much, magazine. Was it ADN Chronicles, by the way? You fuck you, Nintendo Power. I mean, I read two gaming magazines growing up, you know, beyond the early 90s. And one was Nintendo Power, and the other was, for the exact reason Johnny just mentioned, Game Informer. If Game Informer went under, it'd be kind of like, oh, that kind of sucks. But if Nintendo Power, well, it's not going to be published anymore. It affects me a little bit less, even though I read at least 100 less issues of it than I read of Game Informer. And yeah, I mean, part of it was because it was so blatantly just apologetic for some of the Nintendo stuff. It was almost charming. Like, you, in this weird way, you'd be like, really? Come on. You know better. You can do better than this. But at the same time, I just sort of enjoyed reading it. It was, even when I was reading it in the mid-90s, early 2000s, it was a little bit unprofessional. It was a little bit kind of weird and kind of an odd read. But I enjoyed it for what it was. But yeah, it never felt like the slick publication a lot of the other game magazines are. Although I understand it became more of such in the last few years. So yeah, I guess all my memories are kind of dated by that one time frame where every game was the best game ever until it came out and got reviewed and they slammed it, but you already bought it. Thanks, guys. Previews suck if you can't say that the game sucks.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, my only comment would be that I remember receiving copies of Nintendo Power in the mail, and I'm not sure why. I don't know if at some point I had a trial subscription, and it seemed like every few months it would come and go and come and go. I don't remember actually reading it.
I had that too, though. So I didn't pay for it
right.
I don't think.
I mean, unless my parents did, but I doubt they would. So
I got it for like 2.5 years straight at one point. I mean, yeah. That still happens to me though. Like I get like 4 or 5 magazines right now that I've never ever signed up for or expressed interest in. I do wonder if sometimes magazines get really flippant, and I think this has been going on for a while with the free trial and just let it keep going just to get ad numbers up.
Yeah, I think they care more about circulation than they do about whatever it costs you to send that issue.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so I mean, maybe that's what that was. But yeah, now that you mentioned it, I don't know that I ever actually subscribed to Nintendo Power. I think it just showed up and then just never stopped.
Yeah, so the only thing I remember that came out of Nintendo Power was the Donkey Kong Country video. which I don't know if that was actually tied with Nintendo Power, if it was something separate that was sent.
I don't know that it was produced by the Nintendo Power people, but it was sent to people who subscribed to Nintendo Power.
Yeah.
So we'd use their mailing list.
Right. Yeah. So
I actually got it when I wasn't getting Nintendo Power at the time. So I think it was that list plus some other stuff.
There were other ways. If you had registered a warranty for a Nintendo game or something like that, basically if they had your address for any reason.
You got the VHS.
This was long before Club Nintendo. So they didn't necessarily have everyone's address. But if they had your address, they would send you these promotional VHS tapes that were hilarious and I watched them over and over.
I did too.
But we've talked about that before. It's really a separate topic.
It isn't though, because originally Nintendo Power really had a mission statement not dissimilar from those videos.
Well, it couldn't tell you it. They couldn't talk about other competing consoles except to denigrate them.
I mean, it was the party press. I mean, it really was.
Yeah. And if Nintendo wanted you to think that sticking to cartridge was a good idea, then Nintendo Power was towing the line and telling you this is the best thing for you.
Then the cover story was load times, N64 doesn't got them.
Exactly.
Which I just wish I could see the cover art for that story. Just in my head, it's brilliant.
There would be articles like right up to the DS where it was just like 5 reasons why the DS trashes the PSP, you know.
Final Fantasy. If it's the Final Fantasy, why is it number 7?
Well, and that's a more modern trend, because when I was a kid reading Nintendo Power, they wouldn't even acknowledge the existence of any competitors.
Yeah, there were no competitors.
And as far as I was concerned, there were no competitors. Like, I had to hear about Sega Genesis from people at school. Didn't know what the hell it was. To this day, I don't know that I've ever seen a TurboGrafx-16 console in person. So these things just didn't exist if you lived within the scope of Nintendo Power. And I remember when they sent out that Star Fox 64 VHS tape, which was hilarious on many levels. They had people dressed up as Sony and as Sega. They were like the representatives of those companies. And they were, of course, their minds were blown when they played Star Fox. They said, oh God, we don't have anything that even comes close to this. And I thought it was weird at the time that Nintendo would even acknowledge that those companies existed.
Yeah, it was weird. Like, cause if you go back and read the stuff from the early 90s, Sega is not a thing that exists.
No, they're not doing comparison articles. Are you kidding?
If you read an article about a game that had been on Genesis that was finally getting ported to Super Nintendo, it's a new game.
Yeah.
Brand new game. Oh, never existed before this. Or they'd reference it as like the arcade game, which is totally different than the console game. And you're like, no, this game already happened.
We're chasing around it, but Nintendo Power was propaganda. And it was beloved propaganda. And that's why many of us have very fond memories of it. And ultimately, it was pretty harmless, so I really can't talk bad about it. You know, it's a thing that I love in the past. I have no affection for the current incarnation of it. I think it, you know, the closing of Nintendo Power is a weird footnote in the week. But if we're going to reflect back on it, yes, it was a very, very important part of my life. And so I'm happy to celebrate that on any occasion, whether the magazine's closing or not.
Yeah, I mean, to me, that magazine hasn't existed in a decade.
Yeah, and I don't even see magazines anymore, so... So, next up, we're going to cut our list short a little bit since we're running long. That was, there was a lot to say about that, I guess. But, let's talk about the Nintendo Direct. We just had one this week. It's probably, you know, for last one we're going to have for a couple months unless something really bizarre happens. And for some reason,
people Nintendo just announced one and staged it while you asked that question.
Well, it's possible, but... you know, people always get really excited for these, and sometimes they come out with some really unexpected announcements and some really, you know, some really big stuff. But, you know, maybe in December, you probably shouldn't expect anything really mind-blowing.
No.
And what we got is basically a couple of release dates and a couple of delays, unfortunately. So just to go over some of the highlights here, and this is for North America, each region had a somewhat different flavor of it. In Japan, it was more substantive, but you have to keep in mind, as of today's recording, Wii U isn't out in Japan yet. So they had more to talk about, and they talked about TV coming out, although the Japanese version of TV is different than what the rest of us are getting because their internet and TV services are so different over there. So it's a little bit different situation. I was a little surprised they didn't really talk about TV in the Western versions, but that may end up being the source of a sort of miniature version of Nintendo Direct when it does come out.
Yeah, that indicates to me that TV is still some ways
off.
Yeah,
I wonder if it's actually going to get delayed past December at this point.
Yeah,
or maybe it'll be like the week after Christmas or something like that. Anyway, the announcements we did get are that finally Fire Emblem is coming out in for 3DS is coming out in February in America. I think a little bit later in Europe. I think in March for that. But we've heard from a few people that this is one of the best games on 3DS. It's been out since April in Japan, and it's, you know, very beautiful 3D graphics.
It sold a ton of DLC in Japan.
Yes, has a lot of DLC. Some of it was free, at least for a limited time. I would expect we might get that deal mirrored here. But, you know, we've talked about Fire Emblem on the show before. We did a retroactive on it. It seems to be a really good series. And, of course, if you're a fan of Advance Wars, you should definitely be on the lookout for it. But it's the kind of game that we haven't really seen on 3DS since launch with the
Tom Clancy game.
Yeah, the Ghost Recon thing. Yep. So, and I'm sure Fire Emblem's a lot more polished. So I'm really excited for it, actually. I think it's the perfect kind of game to come out on 3DS right now, where it's a genre that's not really being currently served. So I'm certainly excited for that. We're also getting the Brain Age Concentration Training. This was the Oni training or the demon training that's been out in Japan for a while. Yeah. It's the super difficult version of brain training, which is, I don't know how well that's going to go over here, but
it's hilarious. I mean, beyond that,
it's going to be the reaction to it in the West, I think, is going to be very interesting, because I can see that sort of thing being a natural progression for the series in Japan. And over here, if you think about the audiences that they marketed Brain Age to, I don't know that they really want that kind of super difficult, very repetitive. It's almost like a score attack game.
Yeah.
And the people who do tend to like those games, I think, are going to be turned off by the Brain Age brand. And they're probably not going to be very interested in that sort of thing, even though this one is probably much more catered to the sort of hardcore score attack mentality.
Are you saying we're not going to get an ad campaign of Taylor Swift on a sofa with demon horns playing this game? I'm not a gamer, but when I am, I solve math problems really freaking fast.
Who would be a good spokesperson for a brain?
I think I've already come up with the ad campaign. I think that's done.
Taylor Swift?
Nintendo. Taylor Swift, Oni horns, red face, on a sofa. When I'm not a gamer with my DS, I solve math problems really fast. Done.
That'd be pretty amazing. I would love for them to go with something a little geekier like Neil deGrasse Tyson And I think that, I mean, he has enough of a cult following these days, and he's known for being a really smart guy, but he's also the perfect person to kind of sell something like this that is educational, but also very nerdy and challenging. I could see that being pretty funny, but I don't know. I don't know how the hell they're going to market this. It's going to be really interesting. You know, Brain Age did pretty well, even in America, the first couple on DS. It wasn't as big of a hit as it was in Europe and Japan. But it did pretty well, although at this point, it's been so long since those games came out. I don't know that they really have a whole lot of carryover, you know,
no. Yeah. recognition of it. It feels like 100 years since those games came out.
I don't know, man. It was a different era. I got mine, like, handed out to me for free at a GDC. It was really weird. Like, Nintendo just said, here you go. Here's, like, 5,000 copies of this game for free so you can spread the word about how great it is. Like, they did this during their press conference, so it was so weird.
That was probably GDC 2006.
Yeah.
Yeah. That was a long time ago. I know.
The back of my copy of Brain Age says, like, property of Nintendo on it.
Nice. Stolen.
Yeah, so, but I'm glad that's coming out, and it'll be interesting to see how it does. We also found out that Harmonite, Rhythm Hunter Harmonite from Game Freak, is finally coming to the West, although we don't know when. Probably sometime in the spring. That's an eShop game. It was a very expensive eShop game in Japan. Mm-hmm. It was like over $15, I think. But it got pretty good reviews. It's a rhythm game, but it's kind of an action platformer, and you swing a sword. It sounds a lot like Bit Trip Runner, but maybe a little more action-y in terms of there's kind of some combat. And I think you can miss notes and keep going. It's maybe not as strict as Bit Trip Runner that you have to play every level perfectly. It has really nice 2D artwork.
Yeah, we already have a review, right, on the site?
We have an import review. Of course, yeah. Yes.
It's been out for a while in Japan. Yeah.
I mean, really, it coming to the West is not surprising to anyone. We've made a game. It will come out. But God, I want this game out so badly.
Are you frustrating. You're excited for it then?
Yeah, I am. I'm frustrated. It's probably not going to be till spring, though. Ugh.
I want to play the next game from the guys who made Drill Dozer. So I'm looking forward to that. Unfortunately, very unfortunately, we found out that Pikmin 3 is being delayed again to quarter 2 of next year. So sometime in the April to June timeframe.
To the Wii U successor.
No, it's still a Wii U game. But now in Japan, this is apparently coming out in Q1. Which I certainly hope is the case, because if it comes out in Japan, then I know it's a real game that will eventually come out in America.
I know this game actually exists.
You've actually played the game, and you still aren't sure of its existence?
It made one level and trolled the hell out of everybody.
Yeah, especially based on what I did play, I'm definitely not sure that it's a real game at this point. I think they have a lot more to show about Pikmin 3. I think they have a lot to prove. And I feel confident that they will do so, but I still feel like I know virtually nothing about Pikmin 3.
Now, do we think that this game is going to sell at all? Like, it's missed the launch window. It was its best opportunity to be, you know, for a new audience to find it.
It's a good question.
It will sell to a niche audience, but it's not going to get widespread sales numbers.
Yeah, like I think it would have had a chance if there were fewer launch titles and if this was one of them.
I think even if it was there at launch, let's say 300,000 consoles were out at launch, roughly based on Nintendo's numbers. It sells 80,000 copies, 90,000 copies.
But what if Halle Berry's playing it on a white couch in a brightly lit room,
wearing a Pikmin suit,
and talking about how cute they are and how much she loves gardening?
So the only thing I could think of that could potentially raise interest is if people enjoyed the Pikmin game in Nintendo Land.
That's true.
And we both mentioned it earlier in this episode, but I think that's one of the better games in Nintendo Land. And even if the gameplay isn't really like Pikmin.
But, you know, it is and it isn't Pikmin-y. I mean, there's it of all the games, maybe the exception of Zelda, It has some of the most faithful gameplay elements of the game. I mean, the F-Zero game is whatever. and the Yoshi game has nothing to do with... I mean, Yoshi's not a car you ride around in.
It has the Yoshi music, damn it.
Well, James, do you feel like the fact that the Pikmin Adventures thing in Nintendo Land is so close to the actual Pikmin experience, does that mean that Nintendo has more responsibility to make Pikmin 3 kind of evolved from that?
I would say the Nintendo Land game is a very, very simplified version. I mean, on the surface, it plays kind of the same, but in the end, like, you're kind of just clicking on things in a way.
Well, yeah, but you do a lot of
that.
There is
more to that to an actual Pikmin game.
Nintendo, in their mind, would tell you they have no responsibilities to do anything with Pikmin at all.
That's what concerns me, because if they, I mean, I expect Pikmin 3 is going to get good reviews no matter what. But if the reviews come out, I mean, this is a game for gamers. It's a game that is going to live or die based on critical response and word of mouth among people who actually know what the fuck Pikmin is, which is a small subset of people who play video games. And if it's basically just Pikmin 2, but in HD, you know, if it's the same thing and the taglines for all the reviews are, hey, it's more Pikmin, finally, then I think the game's really going to bomb, because it's only going to sell to people who've played other Pikmin games, which is not that many people.
You know, I think it's only going to sell to people who have been waiting for another Pikmin game.
Yeah, some people might feel they've had enough. But I think if Nintendo is actually innovative with it and does some really cool new stuff that you haven't seen in other games, then there's a chance that they actually might get some buzz about this. And people say, you know what? Even if you've never played a Pikmin game before, Pikmin 3 does some really cool stuff. But, I mean, they can't just make the same thing over again. It's been way too long since Pikmin 2, and the awareness of this series was never that great in the first place.
No, I mean,
it's
Pikmin
certainly
2...
not good now. I think they really need to do something that impresses people, and it's not just make another Pikmin.
Well, this one,
I mean,
has,
I don't know what that
Pikmins.
Is, but what they've shown so far is they made another Pikmin. And yes. I'm sure it'll be very high quality. I'm going to enjoy it if that's all it is. But I think if they want to sell a couple hundred thousand copies at least of this, they really need to go a little farther than that, you know?
Yeah.
So I'm hoping there's more to this than we've seen so far. I hope they are going to push the envelope in some way and do something really cool. You know,
check the controls.
I don't know what it is, but I think they need to do something that actually gets the larger community, you know, excited and say, hey, this is worth picking up a Wii U to play, you know, because they still need to do that. That is their job in the next year, is they still, you know, they've sold a bunch of Wii U's to people like us who were going to buy one anyway. But they've got a lot more work to do to prove to other people that even with the new Xbox and PlayStation coming out at some point in the future, you really need to own a Wii U. And here's why.
Pikmin 3 needs to do something with the tablet that the other two couldn't do. And from what, I mean, obviously I didn't play the E3 demo, I wasn't there.
Yeah.
But from what I gathered, it didn't feel like it did anything that.
It didn't. No. And it's unfortunate, because, you know, I remember back to when, like, the DS, you know, first came out and people were saying, you know what, we're going to have, like, really cool RTSs for a mainstream system. Yeah. And it never really happened. If this
well,
can be
Napoleon.
Like that.
Well, there's Napoleon.
If this can be the you know, console RTS that just awesome, and, you know, if you're an RTS fan for PC games, this is, you know, you gotta check this out because it's got great online play and it has this and that. If this game can be that for that group of that audience, then that's a brand new set of people that can play Pikmin and enjoy it. So I agree with you, John. I think there's opportunity here. I didn't see anything at E3, but again, it's been delayed. So who knows what they've been, you know, working on since then? Who knows?
Yeah, exactly. They haven't shown they actually haven't shown anything new from this since E3. Mm-hmm. All the demos since then have been the same E3 demo over again. So I'm very curious to see what they can do with an extra year. And even at E3, it was clearly a very small sliver of the game that they were showing. And yeah, I think there's still a lot of mystery over this game. I know people like to think of it as being a known quantity, and why won't this just come out? I just want to play more Pikmin. But I think they actually still need to sell this game, not to us, but to them.
You know what? They need to sell that game to me, mm-hmm. because from what I've seen, I'm not looking to buy this game day one.
Me either. I still haven't played Pikmin 2.
Yeah, I casually enjoyed the first Pikmin game. I missed the second Pikmin game, and I didn't feel any pain in having missed it. I mean, if they can't sell this game to me, gosh, you have a problem.
Yeah. Yeah. So, be interesting to see what they do there. I'm certainly not down on the game. I'm not pessimistic about it. I just think there's a lot we haven't seen. I hope there's a lot we haven't seen of it.
They have work to do that I don't know that they're aware of. Let's put it that way.
We also didn't hear about Animal Crossing. I'm not really surprised considering the shortages they're having in Japan. I think
Iwata has officially apologized for shortages in Japan for an Animal Crossing
game.
You
can download
it. Nintendo is physically incapable of releasing this game in other territories in the near future.
It's just absurd.
There are infinite copies online.
Yes, of course.
Maybe that's it. Maybe Nintendo released a very small number of people would download. Like, crap, now we have to make more of them.
You can't make enough of them. Sell a card for downloading Animal Crossing and sell it with like an SD card or some shit. I mean, come on.
It should be you open the box and there's just a download code there. Be like, do it.
Well, they are selling download cards in Japan. And they're having shortages on those too. And I'm thinking...
What?
Don't you people know you don't need a download card to download this game? You can just go to the eShop and buy it.
Well, you know what? I think the problem there is
there's some cultural differences.
Yeah,
in
Japan, but credit cards are not nearly as commonplace. I think
but you could buy an eShop card, a generic eShop card, and then take that home and then buy whatever you want with it, including Animal Crossing.
Yes, that is a true statement.
So there are still other options that I don't know that Nintendo is explaining well enough to people. If they're having shortages on fucking download cards, something is wrong.
Your messaging is all screwed up. They need to produce little stickers that can put on the generic cards. Can be used for Animal Crossing.
Can be used to buy Animal Crossing.
That's funny. So I'm not all that surprised by Animal Crossing at this point. I still think that's going to come out, you know, probably in the next 6 months in the West. But they got to get some shit sorted out at home before they can spread that one out. It's going to be a big hit, obviously. The really disconcerting thing is that they didn't announce a new release date for Luigi's Mansion 2. And this game has been delayed to hell and back. And the fact that we don't even have – I mean, they delayed it and didn't even bother announcing a new release date. I'm not concerned this is never going to come out. I'm just wondering –
What's wrong with it
here?
Yeah.
Well, we know that the game isn't really like in trouble design wise because they've already like we had three full levels at E3.
What if you played the entire game as it existed at that moment?
It would be a good game.
There would be a lot to it. That it was a gigantic demo at E3.
I know, but like I'm saying, based on the delays, that may not be far from reality. You may have played the game as it existed at that moment.
I think, James, you're arguing that they planned on having a lot more levels and they haven't finished that.
Hmm.
That's possible. I mean,
we played three different mansions. How many more are they going
to
have?
My theory is that they delayed the game to add support for the controller pro and then delayed the game to remove it. The Circle Pad Pro, sorry.
Oh, man. You know, what makes these delays all the more painful is that I still think Luigi's Mansion 2 is one of the most impressive and most exciting things I've played on the 3DS, including everything that's actually out. And I'm not even that huge of a fan of the first game. But as a portable game, as a 3DS game, the things that it's doing, the way it controls, the way it looks in 3D is so damn impressive. And the game is very ambitious in terms of the scope of it that they've described. I think that's what makes it feel all that much worse is that it just sounds so awesome. And it has been awesome every time I've played it.
Well, it's the new Zelda game. I mean, Zelda gets delayed, you know, up. I mean, it's kind of a similar phenomenon, right?
Yeah, but who would have predicted that I would care as much about Luigi's Mansion as I do Zelda?
Yeah.
That's what blows my mind.
I got really excited about that game after playing it in what must be the least ideal conditions anyone has ever played a video game ever. In direct sunlight, it should have been an awful experience, but I walked away really wanting to play that game. I think it shows remarkably well, and it sort of visually puts everything on the 3DS kind of, not to shame, but sort of says, look, you can do stuff that's beyond GameCube. It's like high-level GameCube stuff here.
Yeah.
And I don't think we'd seen that from anything else. Even to date, I mean, what, maybe 3D Land? I mean, beyond that.
Kid Icarus is pretty impressive looking.
Yeah, Kid Icarus.
Yeah.
I mean, there are a handful of games that really pushed that boundary, but it's one of the few games on that system that actually feels like it could have been a GameCube or even a Wii game.
Right. It's super impressive. I just can't wait for it. But we're going to have to, and we don't even know how much longer we have to wait.
Forever.
So that's what sucks. So yeah, it wasn't the greatest Nintendo Direct. Look, I mean, the things that they announced were things that we knew were coming, and we knew they were coming pretty soon, and the rest of it was just kind of delays. So really nothing to get super excited about, but certainly there are some good games coming up. I would say it appears that Nintendo doesn't give a shit about January.
No.
But
no one ever does.
But we've got our backlogs, and I know I have a ton of stuff to play through, so I'll be okay, but I do kind of wonder, especially after a new system comes out, not having anything in January seems like maybe a bad idea. But we'll see how it plays out.
It still feels like there should be a Wii U game every month for this next year.
At least. There'll be some third-party stuff. For sure.
Yeah, I know, but it feels like Nintendo should have planned to have one out every month.
Yeah. So that's going to be our show, everybody. Thank you for listening. We might have listener mail next week. It depends entirely upon you, good people. So please send your emails to rfn@nintendoworldreport.com. Thank you very much to TYP for being our guest this week. And Mike, why don't you plug your new episode?
Sure. Zach and I recently recorded an episode that is now up. Just up for a few days. Check it out. It's a lot of fun. We actually have some games from systems that we've never used before. So that's sort of a teaser.
And the music is amazing.
I'm only halfway through, but I'm enjoying it so far. Yeah, it's always a very happy day when a new episode of Radio Trivia comes out, and I always encourage people to go check it out. If you like this podcast, you will probably like that podcast. It's really, really cool stuff, and it's a unique show. There's really nothing else quite like it on the internet, and there's a lot to be said for that. So I hope you will go check out Radio Trivia Podcast Edition. You can find it at NintendoWorldReport.com or on iTunes. And be sure to subscribe and rate and review it along with our show. That would be very
review
nice.
Review it highly.
Finally, just want to make a quick reminder that coming up after the holidays in sometime in January, we're planning to do our live retroactive feature on The Legend of Zelda Majora's Mask. And it is a long game. There's a lot to it. So you might want to go ahead and get started on it pretty soon here. I'm going to have to force myself. I've just got so many other games to play. But I do want to squeeze in some time with Majora's Mask. So just before it gets too late, you might want to carve out a little bit of gaming time over your holiday, over your Christmas vacation maybe, to play some Majora's Mask. Because I think, especially if you've never played it before, it will be the feature that we do will be far more rewarding if you're familiar with the game. It's a very unusual, dense game, and I think a little bit of familiarity will go a long way. And it'll make it a lot easier for you to participate in our live show when we do that. So we're looking forward to hearing from a lot of you, and I hope we're going to have some great discussion about Majora's Mask. So start getting ready for that.
Yeah, it's worth repeating, do not play the GameCube version of this game.
If you can help it. If that's your only choice.
But it is busted. It is busted like a...
You do not want to play this game for 20 minutes and then it get locked up after you've finished the quest, but before you've saved.
That would suck.
Do not do
that. There's a perfectly viable and fully functional version on Virtual Console for Wii that will cost you $10 and will be very much worth it. And, of course, you can get it on your Wii U as well through the Wii mode. So that's going to be the end of this episode. Thank you, everyone, for listening. And we'll talk to you next time right here on Radio Free Nintendo.
Bye.
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 Yeah.